out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings,
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Today's episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor of the show, just look at the link below in the description, or you can go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you will see a link to our Patreon page. All right, welcome to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we do have some legends on the show. We've got two Mr. Olympia winners joining us, including Lee Haney, 8-time Mr. Olympia, and Samir Banute, 1983 Mr. Olympia. And we've also got joining them is Rich Gaspari, the first Arnold Classic winner in 1989 and 3-time runner-up to Lee Haney at the Mr. Olympia. So all three of these champions are going to be joining us to talk about the life and the memory of Eddie Giuliani, who passed away last week. I believe it was on May 1st. And Eddie, of course, was a mainstay at Gold's Gym, the original Gold's Gym, owned by Joe Gold. And then he went over to World's Gym, which was also owned by Joe Gold. And Eddie competed since the 1950s. He was a great bodybuilder in the 1970s, competing in the IFBB. Took second to Danny Padilla at the 1977 IFBB America Bodybuilding Championships, to Mr. America. And then he also won his class at the 1975 Mr. World Contest, a short class, the one that was won by Robbie Robinson. So Eddie was a great bodybuilder in himself, but he was a great supporter of all the bodybuilders who came through World's Gym. And so after Eddie passed, and I put it on Facebook, Lee Haney himself called me up. And he said, we should do a show on your podcast about Eddie, since he was such a great golden age bodybuilder and so well thought of by all the bodybuilders of that era. So that's what we are going to be talking about today. So it was really great to have all three of these guys, Lee Haney, Rich Gaspari, and Samir Banute, all join me. I think it's been a while since Samir saw Lee and Rich, so he was really happy to be part of the conversation. So we will be getting to that in a minute. At the end of our interview with Lee, Rich, and Samir, I'm going to read finally part four of that article about the 1981 Mr. Olympia contest written by Rick Wayne. So this article takes place, or it picks up, I should say, right at the announcement of all the winners of the 1981 Mr. Olympia. So as you can imagine, pandemonium and booing was going on when Rick begins this article. So it's really, really great. There's some great interviews in here with Arnold and with Joe Weider. Really open article, or open interviews, I should say, where these guys really express their feelings about each other. And it's amazing that Joe Weider put this stuff in his magazine. He was not afraid to be criticized, and he was not afraid of controversial decisions, that he let Rick Wayne write this article. I mean, nowadays, I can't imagine that happening. I can't imagine anybody criticizing the organization or the biggest contest in the world. I think that would be pulled immediately. But Joe Weider was not like that. He let it all go. So thank God for that. And we've got these articles to reflect on. So it's really, really awesome. All right, what else is going on? We got a couple emails I want to read in a second. I was out in Boca Raton, Florida over the weekend to see a contest. I had a guy I was training for his very first contest. So he did his first classic physique competition. And he got third place out of three guys, but it was his first show. So he got his feet wet. He finally did it. He had no idea what a competition was all about. So I helped him with his posing routine and helped him get ready for the show with his workout and his nutrition. He did pretty good, but it was interesting watching the show. I had a laugh because I saw the men's physique competition when we had Tom Terwilliger on the show with Tony Pearson and Phil Williams. Tom was laughing about the way that bodybuilders or some of these guys pose, where they put their arms straight out to the side and it looks like they're riding a motorcycle. And I was cracking up watching the prejudging of this contest because every single men's physique competitor out there was putting their arms out to the side like they were riding a motorcycle. It was so, so funny. I'm like, wow. And it looks so ridiculous because their back does not look better. It looks worse. So I don't know where these guys are getting it from. I think it's just monkey see, monkey do. Everybody does what everybody else does. And nobody pays attention to what the right way to do it is. And it was funny because they had the Pittsburgh Championships over the weekend, the big Jim Mannion promoted show, where all the pro bodybuilders, all the top pro bodybuilders in the world will come and guest pose. And so they had Nick Walker there, and they had Hunter Labrada, and they had Derek Lunsford, who's out here in Tampa. They also had Brandon Curry. Big Ramy was not there, though. Everybody was talking about that. But they had a men's physique pro division, and Sadiq Hatzovic won that contest. Sadiq was one of the top pro men's physique pro competitors in the world, and he hasn't competed in a couple of years. And they had his video posted on social media, and I was watching it. And when Sadiq went to the back pose, he did not do the motorcycle pose. He just had his hands out of the side. He was flexing his back. He made himself look awesome. He has a great physique, but he did not do the motorcycle pose. So take note, all you amateur men's physique competitors or anybody else who's competing, do not do the motorcycle pose. It looks absolutely insanely ridiculous. And it makes an old school guy like me laugh because it just looks so stupid. What else we got going on? Keeping busy with my online training at Pro Physique. If any of you guys out there, I specialize in guys over 40 or over 50, writing up workout and diet programs. So if you're interested in being a part of that and having me be your personal coach, I have the link listed right below here in the description of the podcast. So check that out under Pro Physique, and it'll take you directly to my page. So if you're interested in that, check it out. I would love to coach any of you guys out there, especially podcast listeners. I would give you guys a special treatment for sure. All right. Let me read some emails. I finally got some emails this week. Thank you for sending me some emails. My email address is naturalolympia@gmail.com. So if you want to send me an email about this week's show with Lee Haney, Samir Banute, and Rich Gaspari, please do so. Or anything else you want to talk about, just send me an email. I love reading your emails on the air. This first one says, love your podcast. I was just listening to the first part of 1981. Goodness, what a treasure trove you've created, sir. Many, many thanks. Here's a little drawing I made of Bill Starr, a fellow bodybuilder from Maryland from a while back. I hope you have a great day, sir. So he sent me this drawing of Bill Starr. It was really, really well done. So thank you for your email. I've got another one here from London. Dear Bodybuilding Legend Show, John, just a quick message to say thank you for hosting such an excellent podcast. I have listened to many episodes on Spotify, and it's by far the best. Your interview technique, research, historical knowledge, passion for the sport, respect to the athletes and personalities is second to none. Some great interviews with Haney, Gaspari, Labrada, Ray, Ron Love, Peter McGuff, as well as the yearly reviews and the Olympia analysis and general reminiscing. I hope you can continue to interview some big names and personalities of the 90s, such as Dorian, Priest, Dillette, Kevin, etc., as these would be interesting. Keep up the good work. Kind regards, Ashley from London, England. Well, I did do Dorian Yates. We did a two-part interview. And in fact, YouTube took down part two, which I was really mad because I spent a long time editing that video and putting in all these different video clips and pictures. But Living Real, I believe, was the company that did a couple of interviews with Dorian. And somehow they had rights to, I guess, the video clips. I think they bought the video clips maybe from Olympia Productions. So they took down my whole video. So I'm thinking about reposting that and see if it stays up, or maybe I can make some editing and try to get it up again. But I did do Dorian, and he was a great interview. So I would love to do Paul Dillette. Paul was also part of the 1980s crowd. And these other guys, Lee Priest and Kevin Labrone, I haven't reached out to them, but maybe I will. We also got a review on Apple Podcasts. So if you listen to our podcast on Apple, you can leave a review right there. This one says, John, glad to hear you're still on. Spending time with family is key. Great memories, good for the mind. I love your podcast. You are the real deal. Nice to have access to old school lifting. Thanks again. I can't wait to meet you sometime. All right. Thank you. All right. So I think that's all I got, guys. So here is our interview with Lee Haney, 8-time Mr. Olympia, Samir Banute, and Rich Gaspari, where we talk about the memory of Eddie Giuliani, who just passed away on May 1st, 2022, at the age of 87. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have three real legends with me today. I have 1983 Mr. Olympia, Samir Banute, joining us. Rich Gaspari, who was one of the top pro bodybuilders in the 1980s and the first Arnold Classic winner. And of course, we have the great Lee Haney, 8-time Mr. Olympia. And we are here to talk about the recent passing of Eddie Giuliani, who was a mainstay of Gold's Gym and World's Gym and one of the real icons in the sport. And Ed just passed away a couple of days ago at the age of 87. Lee, thank you for coming up with this subject. And it was your idea to do this because you guys all knew Eddie training at World's Gym. And he was such a great guy. And when he passed away a couple of days ago, I noticed all the notices on Facebook. Everybody had great things to say about him because he was just such a good person.
Yeah, Eddie was, man. Eddie was incredible. And my first time meeting Eddie as a youngster coming out to California.
And what year was it? What year was it?
1983. Okay. 1983. And I recall once I walked into the gym, Eddie was there at the desk. I mean, he greeted me. And one of the first things he said after he saw me, he looked at me, you know, just checked me out. And then he said, "Joe, come and check out this kid, you know, Joe Gold. Come and take a look at him." And so Joe came out of the office. And then as he and Eddie were standing there, Joe circled me. He walked around in a circle and he looked and then he stepped back and said, "Okay, kid, pull up your pants leg." And I pull up a pants leg. He looked down at some of my calves and said, "You're going places." And then he went back to the office and closed the door. But, you know, Eddie, man, he was always the top greeter there at World's Gym, you know. When I needed a T-shirt or any clothing or whatever to do photo shoots or whatever, Eddie never charged me a penny for it, man. His smile lit up the entire place. I mean, the atmosphere. I mean, we didn't have music at World's Gym. There was no music.
Yeah.
Was no air condition. It was none of that craziness. It was totally different from the atmosphere from Gold's Gym. But what charged that atmosphere was the heart and the personality of Eddie Giuliano and Joe Gold.
Yeah. You know, Lee, I went to World's Gym the first time, late 78. After the Mr. International competition, which is actually, I lost to Roger Keller in the overall. Who also, John, who won the overall? Joe Nazario, right?
In what year, sir? 77?
78 Mr. International.
Yeah, it might have been Joe Nazario, yeah.
Anyhow, so I went to World Gym. Tom Platz has already left 1 month before me because we both came from Michigan to California, where I'm still here now. The thing is, I walk into World Gym and Joe Gold looked at me and said, "Kid, I'm going to tell you my honest opinion. You should have won the international."
Wow.
He said that. And I said, "Oh, my God, that really like lifted me up so much." He said, "Look, you're welcome in my gym. You have a lifetime membership."
Wow.
It gave me tons of clothes. He gave me all colors, or you name it. And so this is how it started. It really lifted my spirit. You know, Joe Gold, rest in peace. Ed Giuliani, which is, he wasn't there that one day, the second day, because, you know, between Zabo and Eddie and Joe, it's like they have different shifts at times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it was so wonderful. I really felt at home, just like what Lee Haney said. It was a little different atmosphere, but it was solid atmosphere. It was a beautiful atmosphere. And I really, I hate to play favors here, you know, between Gold and World. I always like kept going to both places, but I really did feel more comfortable at World Gym. I felt a little more comfortable. The fact that Joe Gold was very supportive and you see them, you know, like they're very close, like within yard from you while you're training.
Hmm.
And so, you know, became a close friend with Zabo and Eddie. And, you know, I spent like at least 2-3 decades there, bro, you know?
Wow.
Knowing these guys at this close level, whenever we had something going on by Art Zeller, you know, he have like slideshow. You know, he said, "Samir, let's do it at your house." Eddie show up, Zabo show up. It just was wonderful camaraderie. It was good, real people. And I will never forget that. And really, I was so, you know, bummed out losing these guys, watching Joe Gold leave us about more than, 18 years ago, approximately, if not more. Yeah, and then gone, Zabel gone, Eddie's gone. And, you know, I'm sure we will go eventually. I don't know when, but it's that remembering these people, these icons, they're like really, it's like a scar on my body. It's like he doesn't go away. I love these people. May he rest in peace.
Yeah, Rich, you said the same thing, right? You said it was like a family atmosphere at World's Gym.
It was so different, you know, because even, you know, Lee, if it wasn't for Lee, you know, I was a nobody and I was his training partner. So he brought me along, you know, to that gym and I got accepted. You know, Eddie Giuliani came up to me, goes, "Hey, kid, where are you from?" I said, "I'm from New Jersey." He goes, "Ah, Jersey. You're the Jersey kid."
he was from Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. He was from Brooklyn. So he goes, "Oh, you're an East Coast guy." But he goes, "If you're with Lee, you're good. You know, you're going to train here." So, you know, so it was great that Lee got me, you know, in that gym and we got to train. And then, you know, Joe Gold, you know, looked at me as well. But I was just Lee Haney's training partner. You know, it wasn't until after I won the
You really brought a lot of good atmosphere. I saw you, you know, ever since I met you in San Diego. I kind of looked at you and I said, "Holy crap, this guy looks incredible." First time we met San Diego, remember?
Yeah.
Bill Pearl.
But Lee and I had just like some of the most tremendous workouts. And, you know, I was like, he always told me I was a pit bull, you know, pushing him. And we'd be fighting in the gym, but we'd had some of the best workouts. So we would bring that, you know, that atmosphere to World's Gym as well, you know. Both pushing each other. I remember doing back in that gym, you know, they had that chin bar. I was doing weighted, and then the T-bar rows that were right there when you went up the steps.
Yeah.
Remember? And it was just a great, great atmosphere. I mean, afterwards, my Olympias that I trained for, getting second to Lee, I would spend a month living or 2 months living in, you know.
It's all your fault because you helped Lee to get better.
That's right. You gotta kill me.
Well, we both had great synergy, you know, because Lee helped me, you know, get more balance. Because when I was out of balance, had big legs, my shoulders were narrow. Lee goes, "Man, you got to fix your balance. You got to build up your upper body. You got to, hold off your legs a little bit." I pushed his legs. We did calves every other day. No matter what, him and I would do donkey calf raises, seated calf raise. I mean, remember, Lee? We'd start the workout with calves every time. And it was like heavy calves that we did that at, you know, Worlds or wherever we did it.
And, you know, let me just say and honestly say that your condition was a bit better than all of us.
It was the only thing that I can do that can be better than Lee is my conditioning, but he had everything else. So I don't know.
Lee Haney is the heartbreaker because Lee has overwhelming physique. I mean, when Lee stand in the lineup, I don't care how ripped you and I are, but he's just like, Lee presence was a freaky man. Shoulder to waist ratio is out of this world.
Yeah.
His waist. Remember Lee Haney's waist, because I was shorter and I had a thicker waist, and I looked at his where I go, "Damn, I can never beat this guy's waist. This is small."
But that atmosphere at Worlds had to be unbelievable, right? With all those superstars training there at one time. I mean, that had to be incredible.
And like we all of us said, is like it was just like this family atmosphere. You felt at home in that gym. You went to Gold's Gym to kind of show off. And, you know, I went to Gold's Gym. To me, I felt like a goldfish in a fishbowl being watched. You didn't feel that way when you went to World Gym. When you were in World Gym, you felt safe. Yeah. You were there with amongst other guys that were doing the same thing. They were all there to train hard. And that was the atmosphere. No music. All you heard was clanging of weights.
Mm. Wow.
But it was so electrifying. When you went up those steps, you were ready to train.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. You better be ready to train. You know, it's like Rich was saying, and as Samir was saying, it was a magic. I don't know how to explain it. the atmosphere, and everybody was expecting the best out of everybody there. You know, you had Tom Platz and Samir and me and Rich, and golly, man, you can't explain it. And Rich was, as Rich was saying, it was totally different than Gold's Gym. Not to put Gold's Gym down, but it was just something you just can't explain. It was very unique.
You are right. 100% correct. And this is my exact feeling. You know, I mean, I lived here all my life, literally. And, you know, I trained at Bo Gym for, let's say, I have been in Southern California for 40 years. And I trained at both places, but I have always felt that little more family life, you know, at World Gym. And I had a close relationship, although, you know, I'm close friend with Grimkowski, Ed Connors, and Tim Kimber. They were my buddy. They were very nice and supportive. But, you know, the passion that Joe Gold and Eddie and Zabel have, because, you know, I know Pete was competitive, you know, but, you know, Joe Gold, they were all actually, you know, competitive. But just being around the old crew,
yeah,
they've been there from the very beginning.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I felt like, you know, how you relate to your grandpa when you added, you know, you feel cozy next to your grandpa. And I felt like Joe Gold, like a godfather, one of those. And yeah, he was. Yeah. They gave me a lot of advice, you know. Samir, you got Lee Haney. You got to train harder.
And, you know, John, one of the things we talked about yesterday, and I'm sure Rich, you and Samir agree with this. We look at the longevity, although we're going to miss Eddie, and we loved him dearly, but he was an incredible example of what's possible when you take care of your health.
Yeah.
To live to be 87, I mean, you know, and then you look at Dave Draper. I think Dave was 79, I believe.
Yeah.
Chris Dickerson was around 83.
Yeah.
Look at the longevity of these legends and how bodybuilding during that era and what it was meant to do during that era, how it was lived out in the lives of these icons. You know, yeah, you look at the earlier stages of bodybuilding and all of us grew from that. You saw the level of not only getting a great physique, but the importance of health and wellness and great nutrition. All of those things were the part of the foundation of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
You know, and you've seen bodybuilding sort of move away from that in these the latter years, whereby the athletes are not living as long. And
yeah,
they're not looking at overall health. It's like, you know, live today and whatever happened tomorrow happens.
It's about tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So
no, you're right. You're right. I mean, listen, God bless him. Bill Pearl, he'll be 82 in about 5-6 months. He'll
92. Be 92.
92.
92. I misspoke. Anyhow, and you know, Bill Pearl recently had an accident.
He
was riding a lawnmower and it tipped over and he got injured. And thank God he is recovering right now. And who do you know at age almost 92 riding a lawnmower?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Then you got Albert Beckles. I think Albert is right at 90, 91.
Well,
90?
The message was sound. This, the nowadays, no disrespect to anyone, I'm a lot like you and Richard. I wish everyone the best. And we are here to trying to help the newcomers, the new kids. And the thing is, sometimes rushing into making things happen overnight is something is terrible, because you didn't gain more than 5 to 10 pounds a year, if that. And I never saw Rich Gaspari weighing 280 pounds or 250. There's no need to rush. I mean, putting on 5-6 pounds of pure muscle a year should be enough. But yeah, the health should always come to be the top priority.
Right. Right.
You know, you look, and I mean, this is about Eddie Giuliani, but now, I mean, it is a subject for us to talk about. It's like, it seems like our era, you know, right. I was the cusp of the era, you know, with Lee, And then after that era, it seems like guys that are actually 4 or 5 years younger than us are dying.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or sick. And yeah. I think it's just because these guys were getting much bigger than what we were. I think, Lee, what was your top weight? 245 or 250?
Rich, when I won the first Olympia, I was 243.
Okay.
Yes. Last Olympia, I was 254. So
in the course
of 8 years, I only gained 11 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
In 8 years.
Yes. You know. Yeah.
They're putting on 20 pounds in a year now, or 15 pounds in a year.
Or more. I mean, I know some kids, I really feel sorry for them. I don't want to talk or mention their name, but I hope they get this message, because really trying to be much, much bigger, it doesn't make you look better. You know, yeah. You look at Lee Haitney, he won the Olympia so many times because he was always wasted. He always had that tiny waist. Gaspari, who, in my opinion, could have been Mr. Olympia too, maybe missed it by a hair, thanks to Lee Haney, who always blocked his drive. But, you know, Lee Haney, I mean, listen, Gaspari, he always fought his war with quality.
Yes.
He wasn't the most massive, but you could see he was 24 karat gold.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I mean, what are the most
all about is beauty and keeping it healthy and you know. It is not about being the biggest and having about 30 damn pound in your visceral fat in your midsection. This is the wrong thing, and that's why I think we are talking about it. And I know what Richard said. This is not the topic today. We are here to discuss Eddie Giuliani, but sometimes you cannot help but bring these topic. And you know, as you said, longevity is a very important. And, you know, living to 87 is wonderful, or 90, but dying at 26 and 30, it's insane.
Yeah.
And this is why when people listen to Rich Gaspari and Lee Haney, because we've been there and done that. And this is all we're trying to do.
Well, I also think that the bodybuilders today, they're competing at a much older age.
Yeah, that's true.
I retired at 33. And I think, Lee, what year did you retire?
31.
So we were in our early 30s, and guys are competing into their mid-40s or close to 50.
Yeah.
And they're putting their body through all this, you know, extreme measures of training. But also, you know, I just had a scare with my heart. You know, I had to get a stent put in. And you're looking at bodybuilders that are in their mid-40s that are 300 pounds. Yeah. And even though it's muscle, it's still not healthy for someone in their mid-40s to be 300 pounds, whether it's fat or muscle. And I talked to a cardiologist, he goes, once you're in your 40s and 50s, you got to get leaner. You can't stay that.
You know, I hate to bring this topic. It's not, I won't say it in a derogatory way, but the new method, and I know you would agree, Richard, it's completely unsound, because introducing the insulin thing into bodybuilding, which is create major health issue, because when you take the insulin, you have to load up with high glycemic carbs, and high glycemic carb can add more inflammation and problem to your health, especially as you get older. So, I mean, there are many, many things. I mean, nobody is really educating the young kids. And you know, it's very unfortunate. Some of those self-proclaimed guru, they will tell them, oh, okay, I'll get you big, I'll get you huge. But no, you got to get the people healthier when you take him and not speed up the gun. And, I'll get you up to 300 pounds. And then a few years later, they'll die and they don't take any responsibility for it. That's not cool. That's not what Bill Pearl will tell you. That's not what Lee Haney will tell you. That's not what Rich Gaspari will tell you, you know? Mm-hmm. You have to rely on intelligent nutrition. You have to rely on smart training, recovery, and the whole nine yards. You cannot just rush it. You drive 100 miles an hour, your chances of getting killed on the highway is bigger, much bigger than driving 65.
Yeah, I made a list of some of the guys who passed away and what their ages were. So Serge Nubre passed away at 73. Ed Corney was 86 when he passed away. Franco was 78. Harold Poole was 71. Larry
Franco
Scott was
more than 78. Franco.
Yeah, Franco was 78.
I thought it was in the early 80s.
No, that's
anyways,
go on.
Larry Scott was 76. Sergio was 71. Dave Draper was 79. Dickerson was 82. Joe Weider was 94 when he passed. Jack LaLanne was 97. Zabo was 87. Joe Gold was 82. Steve Reeves was 74. And Reg Park was 79. So they're all in their 70s, 80s, and even 90s.
Exactly. And that just goes to show, you know, the let's say the psyche and the mindset of bodybuilding during that era.
Yeah.
You know, even the magazine showed guys jogging on the beach. And Joe Weider, as well as Dan Lurie, and as well as Perry Rader, they all stressed nutrition, athleticism, all of those things that made you a better athlete. You know, it wasn't just about putting on muscle size and getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
You know, right. The thing that attracted me to bodybuilding was how Robbie looked in his clothes, how Arnold looked in his clothes. Yeah, but they looked good. They looked like superhumans, but they were beautiful.
Yeah. You know,
Ray's Park, beautiful, Hercules. I mean, it was all about the beauty during that time. You know, these guys, man, you look at them, and I don't cut anybody down. I love the guys. And what I like about bodybuilding now, there's something for everybody. You have the mass monster division, you have, but listen, a Rottweiler never outlives a Chihuahua, ever. that is not going to happen. But if you're talking about health and longevity, you gotta think about weight. You have to think about your cardio conditioning. You have to think about good nutrition. I like to call it in-and-out food. You know, I never use red meat and steak and that sort of thing to develop my physique. I use eggs, whole eggs. Because why? Eggs have what is called lecithin and choline, their own fat-burning properties. I mean, you fish. I never did this crazy stuff. You know, and Rich, I nicknamed Rich the Professor because he was always on top of the nutrition part of contest prep. You know, those kinds of things made a difference in a lot of the athletes then and made a difference in who we are today. We feel good. We look good. We're functional, you know, and, you know, we may have a little ding here and there, but listen, we're still alive. And that's the thing. At the end of the day, that's what matters. I'm going to be running off with my grandkids tomorrow, having fun and enjoying life, you know, because at the end of the day, that's what really counts. You know, your wealth without health doesn't mean anything.
That's a good point, Lee, because I think when we were all kids and we all got into bodybuilding at a young age, we were looking at the magazines and we loved the way these guys looked. They looked like you said, like superheroes, you know, and we wanted to look like them in and out of clothes. And they had that great physique. They didn't look unhealthy at all. They looked like they could run down the beach or do anything.
You know, John, I think some of the champions that you listed, they have passed away at early 72, 70 to 80. And believe me, if they have even more knowledge of how to keep their system even more alkaline and do more some of the new, there's a lot of new scientific helpful information, really. There are things that is helping. But overall, our method was sound. Now the method is unsound. And when we talk about it, some of those keyboard warriors get all bent out of shape. They get angry when you know, I say something about certain things. And, you know, not long ago, one of the champion passed away, and I felt very, very sad. And I blamed the situation on coaching. And so they should have been more cautious. And, you know, this gentleman should have been still here with us today. But sometimes they do irrational stuff, and they don't want to listen to the experience, you know. So the new kids, they go crazy. They say, you know, Lee Haney saying that, Samir saying that. But we're only saying it to help in a very constructive, not destructive.
Right.
And it's fortunate nowadays, the kids have to learn from experience. And some of those self-proclaimed coaches, honestly, you know, some of them, and without pointing one in particular, are dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you rely on major drugs that actually, you know, it's like walking on a on a fine line, you know, the chances of getting killed is huge. Blocking different hormones to peak for competition, you know, doing certain things to get big quicker. All of these things should not be done by an average Joe. And if it's done by a professional endocrinologist, we could say not too bad. But it is bad altogether to use this kind of method. I mean, we got to get back to see how Lee Haney won the Olympia 8 times. You know, and he's still here sounding wonderful, as you can see. Gaspari, who has always reached the pinnacle of quality and muscularity, still here. And now we have kids who are like 26 and 28 and 30. They're passing away. And, you know, some of the blame was blamed on some of the coaches. But you know what? I have to agree. You know, you learn these kind of bad habits from someone that's, you know, I mean, I never really trusted anyone right away. You know, I had, what's his name? You remember Armin Tanney?
Yeah.
Armin Tanney was around. Zabel was around me. Eddie was around me. Joe Gold. And these people, you talk to them about what you have done. You respect their knowledge. You know, Bill Pearl shared some good information with me. And so you have to listen to those guys that have been there and done that. You know.
That's a good point, Samir, because I think you guys respected those guys from the eras previous to you, right? And you would always listen to them. You were telling me when you were posing for the Olympia, when you're at the gym and then the guys would come and watch you and Arnold was making comments about you, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes, man. That, you know, and that was incredible. Arnold saw me at the gym. Probably it was about 4 weeks before the 1983 Olympia. And I mean, here I am at 243 pounds, slice and dice. And Arnold looks at me and said, Lee, how are you in this type of condition and you're 4 weeks away from the show? And I just shrugged my shoulders like, well, I don't know. I'm just, you know, and he had this puzzled look on his face. But going into the 83 Olympia, which I got waxed by Samir, so did everybody else, I only weighed 233 pounds. So within that 4 week period, I lost over 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to the drawing board because guess what? I had notes, had stuff written down. I sat down with Fred Hatfield, great friend of mine, and me and Fred looked over all the information. He said, Lee, your problem is you're training like a horse and eating like a bird. He said, man, all you got to do is increase your calorie intake. And guess what? 1984, I went into Olympia weighing 243 pounds.
Yeah.
Same weight.
You look great.
Yeah, because I had something to go back to. It was about the nutrition. It wasn't about no gear or anything like that.
Yeah.
I just wasn't eating enough.
Right.
That's right.
I was here to witness, you know, him die, you know, Lee Haney dieting. It was funny when we were, you know, when he was carving up, we went to get this ice cream called Tofutti. You remember? He's there eating ice cream. And people are like, you're eating ice cream before the show? He was looking at the, you know, the calories and, you know, that he was consuming. And he goes, I can put this in my diet right now, you know, to get ready while I was carving up.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I also, like Lee said, I was a professor reading everything, but I also watched it work on him. I'm saying, I got to do the same thing. And the thing is like when I was getting ready for the nationals, I was trying to make a body weight because I had to be a light heavyweight. And I also over dieted for that show. And I came in the show at like 185. I should have been 198.
Yeah.
But I was so afraid of not making weight that I over dieted. But then from Lee Haney, I learned, I said, I got to eat. And I went into my first pro show, it was 215. People were like, how the hell did you get that big? You know, because I was this 185 bodybuilder. And then I went into the Night of the Champions, you know, saying that I should have beat Albert Beckles, you know, coming in second and then getting third in my first Olympian. I was 218. And then people were like, how did this guy go from 188 to 218? And it was all just eating.
Yeah.
And I was over dieting.
Yeah.
And that's something that was self-taught in us. We didn't have any coaches. We learned from our bodies. Lee learned from his body. I learned from my body. And Samir learned what was best for them. And today you have just coaches, and everybody has no knowledge of what to do. Just like the coach goes, here, follow this.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my problem. You know, early on, I over-dieted. You got to eat. You got to eat. I mean, the thing is, you are what you eat. And the thing is, if you diet too hard, and that didn't never really work for me, over-dieting. I couldn't do, you know, I did my best. You know, when I went to Germany, I was just continued to eat. And you know, one big advice, I really listened to Bill Pearl when he said, Samir, you got to listen to your body.
Yeah.
You got to eat. You know, when you're hungry, you eat. I don't like the idea of force feeding.
No. Yeah.
You know, force feeding. Force feeding. I mean, when we bulked up to gain some weight, you know, we ate a little bit more, but we ate with desire.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you guys all made a good point, too, that you had, you know, back then in the atmosphere of the gym, the old school atmosphere of the gym, you would talk to other people. You know, and you would talk to bodybuilders who had more experience than you. Now it seems like everybody's so tuned into themselves, they don't really converse much with other people. You know, we didn't have like at World Gym, there was not even any music. So I'm sure you guys had great conversations with other bodybuilders. Now it's like everybody just listens to their coach. They don't listen to other bodybuilders who have more experience. Like Rich, you learned from Lee. Arnold taught you, you know. I mean, I heard Arnold doing the commentary at the Arnold Classic the last couple of years. And man, some of the stuff he said, he was right on the money. You know, he commented on some bodybuilder that came out. And I'm like, man, he's got all that knowledge. You know, he knows what he's talking about. He's not just some old bodybuilder movie star. You know, I mean, this guy knows what he's talking about. And that's where you guys would learn all your stuff.
I try to do too, John. I let these younger athletes know when they're, you know, at some of the seminars and we have my certification workshops. Listen, you need to know for yourself how many grams of protein, carbohydrates, and fat that you're on.
Yeah.
You need to know how for yourself, how your body responds to that. And so I actually got, well, how many calories are you on? Well, I got to ask my coach. Oh, wait a minute. Right. Oh, what's the matter with you? You know, you're paying your coach, and after your coach leave you, you're back to ground zero. You know nothing.
Right.
I said, we didn't have that. And nowadays, we had training partners. I say, Rich, how do I look today? Am I full or am I flat?
Right.
Oh, you look like you had to need a little bit, a few more carbs in you. So we upped the carbs.
Yeah.
So we had that kind of camaraderie going on. And that was part of, that is what happened during the old school. You know, we would look in the mirror and say, man, you flat. You know, you look like you're bringing the bit. So you got to eat. So that's one of the dangers of having these so-called coaches, and most of them having even more in the Creekwater USA.
And then you know what's funny, Lee? They send them what to eat, and they have to follow exactly. You know, you don't have to eat that same meal every day. I mean, come on. There's a million kind of carbohydrate. There's a million kind of protein. You know, you don't have to always stay on rice. You can have your sweet potato. You can have your yam. You have to understand, basically, the glycemic index. You have to understand what's a good carb, what's a bad carb, etc. I mean, you don't really, they complicate things. Say, you know what, 4 or 5 ounces, you know, I don't care. Sometimes I eat 6 or 7 ounces. I mean, yeah, it's good to have a portion that you know, like, I know Richard was measuring things to the T. I didn't really measure everything to the T. But you know, come on. But Lee, I mean, Richard, he timed it perfectly, and he was, I mean, honestly, he was probably the most polished on stage.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like, for me, I listen. Sometimes I may eat 35 gram protein. Sometimes I may eat 45 or 30. And so, you know, ballpark figure. And then, you know, I go back to the same thing, you know. Yeah, it's just like keep it simple, you know, if not chicken. I'll have fish. If not fish, I'll have 4 ounces of beef, 4 ounces of chicken, or I may have swordfish with 3 ounces of beef, for example. And I didn't really complicate things, whether it's a little bit of pasta or a large potato or a cup of rice. So these guys feel like, oh, if I sidetrack and change what the coach gave me, it's over with, you know. So I honestly, even up till today, I don't eat the same breakfast twice. One day I have 3 eggs. One day I have I always eat basically nowadays, you know, more healthy. I'm more like eating for longevity. I don't really care about being 230 pounds or 220 pounds. So trying to stay lean and healthy. But I'm just saying, bodybuilders today, they complicate things too much.
Yeah.
And they rely too much on drugs. Some of them, they cannot even scratch your butt without taking drugs. And that's wrong.
Right.
That's wrong. I mean, come on, you're going to tell me, oh, you have to take what they've given you nowadays. I mean, look, Sergio Oliva was huge. Berto Fox, Lee Haney. I mean, these guys were huge. And they didn't really do insulin or go crazy on GH and any of that bullshit. Excuse my language. I know, you know, we learn to get better, but you cannot cross the line into the unhealthy part of it.
Yeah. Right.
There is so many unhealthy stuff being fed to the kids, and this is very unfortunate.
Yeah.
And because it's not really a rocket science.
No. And let me ask you guys about the atmosphere at Worlds. I mean, they didn't have any music there, so I heard stories about, like, Sean Ray just put something on after Eddie died, and he was talking about when he went into World's Gym with John Brown. And he was a teenager, and he put the weight on the bench. And he said back then they had the narrow bench presses. Yeah. So if you put weight on one side, the whole thing flipped over. And then he bang, and everybody looks at him. And then Eddie Giuliani comes running out of the office. He's like, what the hell are you doing dropping weights in my gym? Get the hell out of here. And he kicked him out of World's Gym. And Sean took him back to World's Gym for like 6 years.
He told me this story. I laughed my ass off. You know, I mean, Joe Gold was very sensitive about these things.
Yes.
He wants you to put your weight back in place, and you don't want you to be too noisy. One day, I was training. I'm not sure if Eddie, Gaspari and Haney were there. I really train from the heart. I like to train with intensity, and I go by how I feel. But at one time, I was doing bent over row at World. I have 4 plate, maybe 4+ weight. In the old world, remember the old world? You go upstairs, the first one.
Yeah.
And so one time I was just training like a man possessed that day. I go against the wall to prepare myself for the heavy lift. I smash the wall in my forehead just to get that energy. And Joe goes and, hey, what was that? What was that?
He didn't care who you were, right? I mean, he would kick out anybody. He'd kick out anybody out of the gym.
So Samir, let me ask Nils. Were you there that day that Tom Platz, Tom's was doing a set of curls, working his arms, right?
Yeah.
And he was burning out, did some burnouts, you know, curling. And all of a sudden, and after he burned, you know, finished, he just dropped the bar and it hit the floor. Boom! Were you there that day?
No,
came out of office and said, who in the hell dropped those weights? And then all of the guys start snickering. I think Berta was there. Were you there, Rich?
Yeah, I was there. And so I remember the story.
Yeah. And so Joe Gold came in, who in the hell dropped these weights? Everybody start snickering. And we pointed the finger at Tom. One of his fingers said, it was me. He'll say, if you ever drop those weights again, I'll kick your ass. And then he went back into the office.
Yeah,
I think the weights in World's Gym, man.
He didn't kick anybody out, right? He didn't care who you were.
He didn't care who you were.
You respected the weights.
I don't think he would have kicked out Arnold, though.
Yeah, Arnold's the only one, yeah.
You know, speaking of Ed Giuliani, I forgot to say this to you, John. Every time I walk into the gym and Eddie would go, you need people like me. You know, the Scarface movie.
Yeah.
The best friend scene. And so I tried it many times with him. Danny Padilla, even Arnold. We all tried it. And we tried to be like Scarface. You need people like me. You need people except doing it with Eddie all the time, challenging each other.
Right.
And Eddie knew the coach of Al Pacino in New York. So they were talking about it. And then before you know it, days later, I get an 8x10 from Al Pacino.
Oh, really?
Oh, my goodness.
And Eddie said, Samir, you got an envelope here for you. I said, from who? Believe it or not, it's from Al Pacino.
Man.
So Eddie Giuliani did train Al Pacino.
He did? Okay.
I guess he was a trainer of other stars and stuff. So he was, in his own right, you know, very well known. I mean, like you said, we knew him, and so many other people knew who Eddie Giuliani, you know, was. So yeah, he was an amazing character to train, you know, Al Pacino.
Yeah, when he got his Venice Beach Walk Hall of Fame, Al Pacino gave it to him in 2000.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw pictures of that.
That Italian personality, Gaspari.
Yeah.
I'm with the Italian, they call me Paisano because I have like similar mentality, basically.
Yeah. My nickname in Italy was Louis. They called me Louis when I was in Italy.
Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Eddie was a good competitor too. A lot of people forget that, but he was competing like at 16 years old. I did some research on him. I mean, he was doing shows in New York at 16, and then he was taking second to Danny Padilla. He was competing with Robbie at the Mr. World. So I mean, he had a good physique.
Yeah, he used to like, we should always like, look, it's a Samir, let's have a strategy. This way you can take over Lee Haney. Let's have a strategy. Samir, here's what you need to do. You need to get back and take your title from Lee Haney. He was like motivating me all the time with Zabo. And you cannot stop laughing, man. You know, when Art Zeller joined in the group,
You can't
even train, you know, between Ed Giuliani and Zabo and Art Zeller, you left ass off. Your abs get more ripped.
Yeah.
Now, when you guys were getting ready for shows, would like Joe Gold come out? Would he take a look at you two or an Eddie? Would those guys look at you and tell you how you looked?
Yeah, at times, you know, I take my shirt off and both, you know, oh, Samir, you look really good. You look really good. You know, do this, do that, whatever. And like they tell you, Samir, go lay out in the sun, get some tan. Yeah, there you look. You know, it was good. You know, that's why I'm saying earlier, you felt like you are with family.
Yeah,
told you the truth. They didn't bullshit you.
Right.
And you know, they can be obnoxious sometimes, but you accept it from them because they're a good buddy. They love you. You know, so
yeah,
if Joe both love you, you are lucky. Because if Joe don't like you, it's not fun.
Yeah.
That's what I said. If you had to be accepted into the inner circle, and that's with Joe Gold and Eddie Giuliani and Zabo. So you know, I was fortunate to get into that inner circle. Everybody else, you know, even big names like we talked about earlier, Sean Ray never went back to World's Gym again after that encounter.
Right, right.
Never wanted to go there.
Hey, Rich, just scared him away, you know? Served him right though. I saw when he put that piece up, I put a comment. I said, "Serve you right. You're trying to defy the law of gravity." Everybody, you know, take
back.
Leave the other one empty. Good gracious, you know.
That's for Sean. You know, I just saw Sean a couple weeks ago. We went have lunch together, and we talk about these things. You know, Sean was so passionate. When he told me the story about World Gym, I laughed my butt off. I'm like, he was just so excited to be there.
Yeah.
And what a day. I mean, in all his career, maybe he didn't drop the weight like that.
I love hearing stories like that, though, because, you know, back then in the 80s or 70s, I mean, those old school bodybuilders, those old school gym owners, they didn't put up with any shit. You know, they kick people out. They won't never do that now. You know, everything's on PC now. But I mean, back then, If you didn't like it their way, you were out, you know?
Vince Gironda was like that.
Yeah.
Oh, Vince Gironda was feisty, like you can't imagine.
And George Turner, right? Samir, you trained at George Turner's gym.
George was cool. I got along with George, too, rest in peace.
Yeah.
He was old schooler, but he can get crazy at times.
Yeah.
now, how about Eiferman, too? Did you train
George, with him? I met George, too, in Venice Beach, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Did you meet him? Did you meet Eiferman?
Yes.
I met him.
Did you meet Jim Grimmick?
I met him when I won Mr. Universe because he was living. It was in Vegas. He was living in Vegas.
Yeah, that's right.
Don Grimmick or George Eiferman.
George Eiferman.
Yeah. Did you meet Grimmick?
No, I never. I don't think I ever met. I never met.
I met him on the elevator. That was.
Did you meet Steve Reeves?
I never met Steve Reeves either.
No, I didn't either.
Well, that's why, because I'm consistent in Southern California. I bump into these people.
Oh, yeah. You was with him, Samir. You was with him.
I was there. I mean, you know, I started here at 78, and luckily I came here right in the nick of time. You know, I witnessed them all, from Bill Purr to Reg Park visiting, trained with Serge Nubre, met Steve Reeves twice. And you know all of them. You name it, from Dave John to you were talking George Eiferman. The only one guy that I didn't meet is Clancy Ross.
Yeah.
Yes.
The only guy, but he's also from Southern California. And I met Chet Yorton. You know Chet Yorton?
Yeah.
Chet Yorton actually he beat Arnold in one of the contests early on.
Yeah, Universe.
I'm a good friend with his daughter and her husband, which is actually, they started the Quest Nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Remember? Now they have legendary nutrition. Okay. Very wonderful people. And so I walked one time, Chet Yorton walked into my store. I had a health food store back in Woodland Hills years ago. And he looked, and I said, "Hi, Chet." He was like so excited. Said, "Oh my God, you knew who I am." I know my history. I am so passionate about bodybuilding. When I was in England, I went and I met Oscar States.
Oh my goodness!
Oscar Heidenstam.
Who's
the founder of the NABBA?
Yeah.
Incredible.
And I drove all the way to York, Pennsylvania, to meet Jean Grimmick.
Wow. Mm.
Because I have so much love for the older school. I really respected them. And John Grimmick, he said, "Samir, when is your next show?" I said, "I'm going to compete in Worcester." I was suspended by the FBB at the time. So I competed at that competition with Jeff King and Cal Walk.
Yeah.
And John Grimmick came in. John Grimmick, Dave Draper, Mike Mentzer, Serge Nubre, they all showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this wasn't an IFBB show. But anyway, it's good to talk about all these things right now.
Yeah.
It's incredible history, Samir. And, you know, I want to commend you, John, you know, for what you're doing as far as reserving the history of some of the greatest legends in our sport. Because as we were talking earlier, John, it's a tragedy that in our sport, we don't celebrate and we don't make sure that secure documentation of who and what and when they existed. And when you talk about boxing, everybody knows Muhammad Ali. When you talk about basketball, everybody knows Larry Bird or Michael Jordan. When you talk about
bodybuilding, everyone knows who's Lee Hayden.
Well, you know, Samir, you know something?
Yeah. You know what? I have to say it.
I was on the elevator.
Sorry to cut you.
Partners, we were going to one of the shows, and he said to this young man, a young bodybuilder, teenager in the show, he said, "Do you know who won 8-time Mr. Olympia?" And this young man said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Well, guess what? He's standing behind you. His name is Lee Haney." So that's one of the tragedies of our sport.
Yeah, you don't see that.
The history of it. And that's what I'm saying to John, thank you, John, for doing what you do. And John is now in works of creating a document that will have the history of our sport, how it began, the legends of the sport, all of that. John is working on that. And John, I appreciate your attention to that because that's something that we badly need.
Lee Haney, sorry to cut you guys. Lee Haney, in my humble opinion, you know me, I say it like it is. Lee Haney is one of my absolute favorite in the sport of bodybuilding because no one is more humble. No one is nicer. You're too nice to Richard, but I mean, I have voted for Lee Haney as my numero uno overall man. He really deserves the best. You know, you both do. Honestly, I have a great memory. I remember when I won the 83 Olympia and Lee Haney and Shirley came over to my place in Marina del Rey. We went out to eat and we were like, we're not even rival. We were like buddy. And Lee and I listened to some of the posing music and Lee picked up one of the posing music from me. And he went on to win 8 Olympia in a row. And, you know, I love him, even though he's right here in my face. he's one of my favorite people, really. You deserve a special trophy, Lee Haney. 8 Mr. Olympia, 1 special trophy for me as the nice guy in the business.
And I also feel that way because, you know, people say, who's the greatest bodybuilder? Lee Haney won 8 Olympias and was retired in 31. And you look at Ronnie Coleman. He did the 8 Olympias and he was a great bodybuilder, but still Lee Haney and his last Olympia was better than his first Olympia. And it was controversial with the other guys who won multiple Olympias that their last Olympia was their best Olympia. Another note, what we talked about, today's generation does not look at history. Our generation looked at history like, you guys were talking like I knew, you know, John Grimmick. I read about Clancy Ross. I read about all these guys that were 30 years, 40 years before me.
Yeah.
And I looked at the history of bodybuilding. You talk to bodybuilders, young kids today in their teens. I was with the same thing, the same experience. I was with this bodybuilder, looked great. He was from Egypt. So I go, wow, you look amazing. He goes, I bet your hero is Muhammad Mokawe. And the kid goes, who's Muhammad Mokawe? I said, you're from Egypt and you don't know. He was 21 years old. He had a great physique, Lee and Samir. This kid looked amazing. He was a classic bodybuilder, but he didn't know who Muhammad Mokawe was. And I'm like, you don't know who Muhammad. I mean,
I know.
And they just don't keep history.
I'm going to give you a title for you. You're definitely one of the most passionate and real champion that actually did everything from the heart. And I give you hopefully one day I'll be able to do something where I will have a special present because Luis Gasparri is one champion that actually gone very, very far for what he has.
Yes.
Was real for making a product, was real quality for being real. And this is really what I appreciate about you two, Richard. Really, you're one of the most passionate.
You two guys had way better genetics than me. So I had to do every trick in the book.
This is your downside.
Again, so to get close to you guys, I had to do everything. You know, when I looked at bodybuilding and people told me I would never go far, I knew in my mind, I said, I'm going to go as far as I could go because I'm not going to listen to the naysayers. And I was able to get, you know, to the top, getting 3 times second to one of the, you know, the greatest bodybuilders and winning the Arnold Classic to me was something that, it was more this part of me than my body that got me to do that, you know, and I pushed my body to the limits, you know, and I educated myself on nutrition, you know, training, learning from guys like Lee Haney and Samir and all these guys or what may be, you know, one of the, to me, I'm humble to say, am I one of the greats, but it's cool to be there with these guys that, you know, they said Rich wouldn't go nowhere. And I was still able to be there. So
he went everywhere. Richard, you went everywhere. I have to tell you right now in front of the whole world that I was one a big fan of your quality. The way you appeared on stage, bro, was like, it's like incredible. Yeah. I mean, what you did and what you have is like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Seriously. And, you know, really, you're worthy of a Mr. Olympia, too. No, don't just, I'm just not blowing.
If Lee Haney wasn't around, I'd have 3 Mr. Olympias.
the difference was between
me and Rich.
Lee Haney, listen, Lee.
No, I want to hear what Lee
Gasparri, Gasparri is a very smart guy. But sometimes when you're too smart, it could backfire because he put a lot of smart in pushing and enhancing Lee Haney's physique that it backfired. that he has to surpass.
He made me better. But you know what? I look at, you know, when I look at Rich, and I, you know, Rich is, he's my family.
Yes.
His mom, his dad, his brothers, they're family.
I know that. I
had a chance to meet his mother and his father. And when you look at the genetic blueprints, I mean, you saw that Italian blood, tough, his dad, tough as nails, his mom, this little beautiful Italian mother, but you didn't see the genetics. Not like me. My mom was like almost 6 foot tall. My dad was almost 6 foot tall. My mom weighed about, 185 pounds. My dad was like 215. So I had all of the genetic advantages.
Yeah.
And Rich, he took the science of bodybuilding, the science of nutrition. Then he took the determination of that Italian mindset. He went himself no for an answer and went beyond anybody, you know, other than like a Tom Platz. Tom was the same way.
Yeah.
He had zero genetics and freaked the world out.
Very unfortunate, Lee.
But Haney, I tell you, like,
wait, come on, Lee. Lee, you the heartbreaker, okay? You are also mean.
Oh, man.
Look, Labrada is awesome. Great bodybuilder, beautiful body. But, you know, the thing is, Haney, and again, I see that you were overwhelmingly huge in that your shoulders to weight ratio. And I remember when Dorian tried to compete with you one time. And really, I look at the photo because your shoulders to weight, you know, even Dorian was pretty good even at that time. But he actually improved after that. But when he went face to face with you, your shoulders to weight ratio really, you took him out of the pictures that time. You know, the Dorian is Mr. Olympia, what, 6 times or 4 times? I'm not 100% sure.
Six times.
Six? Yeah. I mean, look, Lee Haney won the Olympia 8 times for a reason. You know, he won it because...
Did you guys ever see this picture of Arnold? Can you see it?
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know if you can see it, but I think he was 16 Arnold. Years old here. He's like really skinny. Like, I couldn't believe Arnold looked like that at one time, you know? Well, before we wrap up, do you guys have any final thoughts on Eddie Giuliani, since we want to do a little tribute to him on this podcast?
I hope one day, like Lee says, maybe we should do some get-together here in Southern California to honor champion. Like, Ed Giuliani was one of the people that really energized me and felt really, really cool around him and Zabo and Joe Gold. I mean, we need to do honoring for all of these guys at once. I think we should contact John Balik. We should contact John Balik and maybe do something together on Venice Beach or, you know.
Yeah.
Bring these guys. We definitely should do that.
That'd be a great idea. How about you, Rich?
I love that. You know, as Samir was saying, you couldn't get better than those awesome, beautiful icons, you know, Joe Gold, Ed Giuliano, Zabo, Artie Zeller, man, they were magic. And they impacted the lives of, we can't even count how many people who came within their circle that they loved.
And remember, Lee Haney, when you came to Southern California and then Rich Gasparri came with you after, you know, Art Zeller has a lot. He's done so much for the sport. He doesn't get the recognition he deserved because, you know, really, he made Muscle and Fitness, the famous magazine that I bought the first time. His great photography.
Yeah.
He is really from within. I mean, look, I'm like, again, I say I'm really lucky and honored that I got to know all these guys from Zeller to Gold to Bill Pearl, Reg Park. And then, you know, and I was really also happy to maintain this awesome relationship with Lee Haney and Rich Gasparri, which I consider really from the heart a true champion, and really love you guys. And thanks for John to bringing us all together on a day like that. So
thank you,
John.
How about you, Rich? You know, like with Eddie, you know, he was impressionable to me as a young guy, and I hope to do the same thing for the younger generation. of bodybuilders coming up. I mean, we try through what we do through social media. You know, I try to, you know, I have you seen lately my posts? I'm trying to be a little bit more, you know, outgoing. So, you know, young kids accept who I am. I'm not just some old conservative bodybuilder.
You're on TikTok now.
but, you know, it's, you know, what Eddie gave back is like, you know, he it's just that era I was so impressed with, you know, to know Eddie Giuliani, Joe Gold, you mentioned Artie Zeller. I had the honor to be, you know, photographed by Artie Zeller many times every time I went to California, and those days will be missed. And to see, you know, Eddie is, I guess, the last of those guys that are now gone, you know, and now it's, I guess it's us. We're the guys left.
You know, Richard, you're also fortunate like me. You came down here too and hang out with these people and you saw everything up close and personal, you know. I remember, you know, ever since the day I met you at in San Diego, was it probably around 80? What year was that, Richard?
Was it? I was already pro.
You were actually an amateur still.
Probably
in San Diego.
It was 83.
Was it 83? Yes. 83. And, you know, ever since, man, you were like going like that, like a upward. And join the team, the good people. Anyway, it's wonderful having this conversation with you guys. And again, thank you, John, for bringing us all together. And
thank you guys for taking time out of your day to do this.
And Eddie's and he's looking down at us, smiling.
That's right. At us right now. That's right.
He's telling a joke with Art Zeller in heaven right now.
That's right. I think him and Joe Gold will be ahead of the gym once we get to heaven, you know.
Yeah, that's it. He'll be right there.
They got my vote. Put the weights up.
It's no different up here than it was down there.
Okay. Hey, I love you guys. I love you. I love you. I love you. My brothers. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
Love you too, Richard. Love you too, Lee. Thank you so much again, John. God bless you. Hopefully, we'll see you again soon.
Okay. Yep. All right, guys. Thanks, Mir. Thanks, Rich. And thanks, Lee. Thanks for joining me on the show again. And we'll see you guys again soon, hopefully.
Take care, Mr. Awesome.
All right. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Rich.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you very much to Lee Haney, Rich Gaspari, and Samir Banute for taking the time out of their busy schedules to join me on the podcast. It's such an honor to talk to these legends of the sport. And I hope we were able to pay a good tribute to Eddie Giuliani, who just passed away. We will all miss him, that's for sure. All right, before I let you guys go, I want to read this article that was written by Rick Wayne. Now, this is part four. Rick wrote four parts of this article about the 1981 Mr. Olympia, which was probably the most controversial Mr. Olympia in the world, or in the history, I should say, right after the 1980 Mr. Olympia. Both those events were probably the most controversial events ever in the history of the Mr. Olympia. So Rick does not hold back, and without further ado, I want to read this article. You guys are really going to love it. It's called The Last Lap by Rick Wayne. All hell had broken loose. Exuberance had given way to anonymity. The moment Joseph Wilcox was declared sixth-place winner, the audience had exploded, which was surprising considering how lucky the German had been to find himself among the winners at all. More boos greeted the announcement that Danny Padilla had won fifth place, and it was difficult to say why. Did the audience think Danny deserved a higher or lower spot? Should he have beaten Roy Callender, whose fourth place was also booed? By the time Tom Platz, the night's wonder boy, had been awarded third place, it was clear that bodybuilding was in for another year of spitting in the air and sickening innuendo. It had seemed everyone had lost interest in the final result of the contest. For now, seething anger had joined morbid curiosity as 45 howling fans waited for the impossible to come true. From his position at the right end of the stage, Franco Colombo surveyed the bedlam. He saw his wife, Anita, sitting with hands over her face, eyes wide with high expectation and fear of the known, perhaps. He saw Joe Weider rise from his seat and disappear into the crowd. And he saw this writer, right fist to his forehead and bawling, "No, no, no." Franco wondered, "Jesus, what's going on? Even Rick, my friend, has turned on me." All that before Len Boslin had actually declared Franco Colombo Mr. Olympia in 1981.
Later, I talked with the big winner. He said he was extremely happy despite the negative reaction to his victory. He had underestimated the competition and was relieved that it was all over. But what the hell? He might just take it into his head to repeat the whole thing in 1982. Son of a bitch. You couldn't help admiring Franco's guts. He knew full well that the next Olympia would be staged in London and not by his friend Arnold. He could expect no favors from the icy Oscar State. Arnold laughed and laughed and laughed. It had been the greatest booing contest of all time, he said. Did he agree with the results? He didn't want to talk about that just then, but he was happy for his friend. He knew how much effort Franco had put into his preparations. Chris Dickerson was not at all diplomatic. He was thoroughly disgusted. Had he won, he said, his victory might have legitimized the Olympia again. The contest had lost a lot in Australia, and after this repetition, it would probably never recover. It would be difficult to explain two disasters in a row. Let them keep their damn title. Oscar State's opinion of the show changed more than once during the night. At one point, he simply did not like the results. Then he wanted to congratulate Franco on a terrific comeback, even though the IFBB secretary didn't think he deserved first place. Oscar was unhappy about the rest of the placings as well. Still later, Oscar's opinion was that the decision of the judges ought to be accepted for the good of bodybuilding. He observed that every placing had been booed. Did he think this would set the Olympia back? Not at all, said Oscar. Not at all. Roy Callender had a different view. Right now, he said, Boyer Coe and Mike Munzer must be laughing their asses off. I always maintain I couldn't be fooled twice, but I was proved wrong tonight. I can be fooled more than once. Danny Padilla was furious. Well, I wouldn't have minded so much if they fixed the show and I'd at least been given a reasonable placing, but this thing was outrageous. The guy who won has one leg. Tom Platz has a very disproportionate body. He's all thighs. And Dickerson was flat. Danny said he was a champion and he didn't mind losing when the other man was better. But on this outing, he easily deserved to be among the top three winners. He could have lived with third or second place, even though he thought he should have been given the title. He had sacrificed a lot to be in the shape he displayed during the contest. He practically lost his job thanks to the amount of time he put into preparing for the Olympia. And the dieting had been murder on his body and his brain. After what happened last year, he said finally, I figured the IFBB would have done its best to run an honest Olympia in 1981. It didn't. He had a call from the West Coast a few days before the event warning him that Franco had been promised the title. He had refused to believe that story. Well, now he wished he'd been less trusting. Tom Platz was calm. He said he would return to his hotel and go to sleep. Already he made up his mind that he would either win the Olympia title or die trying. He would continue to train as hard as possible and try again next year. He held no bitterness whatsoever. Franco and Arnold are the reason I'm here today, said Tom. These guys opened all sorts of doors for us. But I felt, and the audience felt that way too, that someone other than Franco should have won tonight. 100 voices agreed. That's right, Tom. That's right. 3 hours after the event, Oscar State wanted to say, as secretary of the IFBB Judges Committee, I am in no position to query any decision that my judges have made. I accept the night's results. A few days later, Danny Padilla was more like his normal self. Now he was certain the Olympia hadn't been fixed, that Franco was as impressive as he'd ever been, even though his legs may have been somewhat smooth. I'll tell you, man, he said, it was an honor just to be up there competing against the guy. He'd been my hero for years. 2 weeks later, Arnold was still laughing. His personal choice for Mr. Olympia would have been Tom Platz, he said. Why? Did you get a look at the guy's thighs? He didn't want to talk about Tom's symmetry. All I can think about when I see him is how much I tried to develop thighs like he's got, and I never got them. Jesus Christ. Arnold was not surprised to learn that there are many who believed he fixed the 81 Olympia. People were too eager to believe that he wielded enormous power over the lives of bodybuilders, he said. They just didn't understand the situation. In the 60s, he said, Joe Weider promoted just two top stars at a time, maybe three. Somehow, one guy would end up with a good guy reputation, like Larry Scott, for example. He was your super good guy, and the crowd always wanted him to win over the villains, Harold Poole among them. The whole thing sold tickets, and it also created a lot of heat at the Olympia, a lot of excitement. You had the Dave Draper fan clubs and the Scott followers. Then you saw the emergence of Oliva, who was the big bad wolf. Then I arrived on the scene and became bodybuilding's great white hope. Of course, Oliva and I had great admiration for each other, but the stuff in the magazine told a different story. Even today, people still argue about who was better. And depending on where you are, I'll either be the good guy or the bad guy. When he quit in 1975, Arnold said, the whole thing took a dive. Joe Weider didn't have any real superstar, so he started promoting a whole stack of mini champions, and a number of fan clubs sprang up. You had new stars like Casey Viator, Samir Benoit, Mike Mentzer, Chris Dickerson, Boyer Coe, Ed Corney, Roger Walker, and so on. The fans come to the shows rooting for their favorites. When the title goes to, say, Viator, naturally the Mentzer fans will boo, and the fans of the other guys too. So you end up with a lot of booing. That's how I see it anyway. But it's nothing to get upset about. We hear booing at all kinds of shows. From football to rock, even the movies sometimes. He said he'd prefer to have cheering at his shows, but that was just the way things were. The times changed. He thought 95% of the audience had booed the Olympia results. Arnold holds the view that Joe Weider has very cleverly and conveniently made him a target for the collective animosity of bodybuilding audiences. Thousands see me as bodybuilding, per se, he said, and that's what Joe has made them think. Anytime there's a dissatisfaction within the sport, I catch all the flack. I'm the most visible representative of the so-called bodybuilding establishment, so they let me have it. Joe Weider used to be in that position. People used to boo him at shows. I know for a fact that Weider never picked any judges, and he certainly never picked anyone to win. It simply didn't matter. If you won, well, he promoted you, and that was that. But he was booed anyway. It's just one of the side effects of being strongly identified with any movement. He said Joe was a clever manipulator. Joe had deliberately pulled the fire away from the IFBB when the heat was turned on after the Australian Olympia. He had come out with an article after article, all subtly suggesting that Arnold had friends on the judging panel. Some of the features had cleverly suggested ideas to the fans. Did Arnold win on the strength of his name? Were the judges afraid of Arnold? Arnold, Arnold, Arnold. No one asked any questions about Joe or Ben Weider or Oscar State or the IFBB. Joe's done a great job of directing all bodybuilding hostility towards me, said Arnold. For example, Joe did not show up on stage when Franco won. He put on this great act that night, pretending he'd been hurt and so on. That's why I call him the ultimate method actor. Hollywood could use his services. Arnold said that Joe had assured him 2 days before the Olympia and on the day of the contest that he had photographed all the contenders, Callender, Platts, Dickerson, all of them. So he thought Franco, and he thought Franco would win. So what was he so surprised about when Franco won, said Arnold. All of a sudden, he was so overcome by emotion that he couldn't get up there on the stage with Franco. It was just Joe's way of saying, I don't want to be part of this. Count me out. I wasn't even there. Let me stick with my magazine and let the IFBB deal with it. Good old Joe. What an actor. His whole purpose was to direct the hostility towards me and Lorimer and Franco. He thought Joe had been cowardly in Columbus. In his position, Joe should have come out there and congratulated the winner, no matter who he happened to be. Later on, his writers would be free to tear the show apart, but Joe ought to have remained above the whole thing and not put on a display such as he did at the Olympia. There had been talk that Arnold talked Zane out of competing in the Olympia so that Franco might have a less difficult time. No way, Arnold told me. When I returned from Spain after completing Conan the Barbarian, I called Frank and I suggested that we get together and solve our problems. Things had not been very hot between us for a while. I thought it would have been stupid to allow our relationship to die over misunderstandings. After all, we've been friends since 1968. He had always respected Frank, he said, tremendously. He learned a lot from Frank. They've been helpful to each other's careers. Frank had coached him when he was going to business college. So I wanted to forget all the trouble, Arnold went on. I wanted to make sure that I'd done everything to patch things up. I invited Frank to participate in Columbus. It didn't matter in what capacity. He could have competed or he could have given a seminar or a posing exhibition. By Arnold's account, Frank said he wanted to stay under wraps until the 1982 Mr. Olympia. He had never taken part in the boycott organized by Mentzer and Co. Frank Zane was still Arnold's friend. I talked with Zane later. He said it was true that Arnold had not asked him to stay away from the Olympia. Indeed, Arnold had pleaded with him to participate in some way. On the matter of his friendship with Arnold, Frank said they were at least communicating again. Arnold said that he had explained to Frank why he kept his 1980 Olympia plan secret, and Frank had understood, like a good buddy. Ben Weider never had any doubt that the Olympia was judged fairly. That is not to say he wished to go on record as saying Franco deserved or did not deserve to win. He was too much of a diplomat for that. However, it was his view that the judges did the best they could in their circumstances. It was possible, he admitted, that they were awed by Franco's reputation, but there was no evidence that they fell all over themselves to place Franco first. The score sheet showed clearly that the great majority of the judges placed Franco second. And it was this consistency that had finally carried Franco to the number one spot. On the matter of Sten Ole Thorsen, the IFBB president said the Danish Federation had pleaded with the executive committee to reinstate Thorsen after he'd been suspended for biased judging at the 1980 Mr. International. And the IFBB had decided to give Thorsen a second chance at the 1981 European Championships in London. Finally, Thorsen proved worthy of a place on the Olympia panel. On his part, Thorsen says he was never suspended from judging, and Oscar State concurs. It was true that he was a close friend of Franco's, but then he had placed Dickerson first in the Olympia, not Franco. It goes without saying that the 1982 Olympia will be a hotly contested affair, and I'll be there. Joe Weider responds, Arnold always had a love-hate relationship with me. He loved me for sticking with him, yet he hated his dependence on me. He once told Ricky, the man I love most and hate most is Joe Weider. So it doesn't surprise me that Arnold now thinks I have cleverly and conveniently made him bodybuilding scapegoat, the devil responsible for all the commotion in the sport. Frankly, I'm flattered that he thinks I could pull off something of that magnitude. That would definitely be a brilliant feat. But Arnold knows the real story. If the bodybuilding world has developed ill feelings towards him, those feelings are a direct result of his actions, not mine. The 1980 Olympia, for example, Arnold's inconsiderate treatment of the other competitors, then his derisive comments about them on the Merv Griffin TV show. And then there's the International, which Arnold staged. Ticket holders were promised that the winner of the Mr. Olympia would appear at the Mr. International competition. Well, since it turned out to be Arnold who won, it was Arnold who appeared. Why not? It was his show, but there was no seminar, no exhibition, just disappointment. Our readers can be sure that I in no way acted as Arnold imagined I did. When a champion operates like that, fans don't need to tell me who to boo. Concerning Franco, I told Arnold that Franco had made amazing gains, that his upper body was fabulous, but I never predicted that he would win the Olympia. Ask any of the bodybuilding stars and they'll tell you, I never venture to make predictions. I've been around long enough to know the futility of that. There are just too many variables. And concerning bodybuilding audiences, sure, I get doses of boos and cheers. It's all part of the game, and I love it. The fans are only showing that they have feelings and that they care. It shows that they're involved. How could that bother me? Despite what Arnold has said, my opinion of him remains unchanged. He's a great bodybuilder with an energetic, determined mind. He knows what he wants, and he plans well for the future. He seems to be able to actually visualize it. It's the immediate present that Arnold has trouble dealing with. However, I admire and respect him for his contributions to bodybuilding. And when the smoke clears, he'll still be number one in the fans' eyes, as he is in mine. All right, the end. Like I said, great article there by Rick Wayne. This was kind of the wrap-up of the 1980 Olympia. It takes place right after the results were announced. And Rick just interviews everybody. It was also interesting that he interviewed Danny Padilla. And when I had Danny on the show last year, Danny said the same thing he said in the article, that it was just an honor to compete with Franco, but I'm sure Danny had a different opinion right after the contest, and that's why it was great that Rick was there to get everybody's opinion right as they came off the stage, including Roy Callender and Chris Dickerson and Tom Platz and Arnold and Franco and Joe Weider and everybody. So that was awesome, awesome stuff. All right, guys, that's it for the show. Next week, we will have one of our favorite guests, Roger Schwab, who was – speaking of the 81 Olympia, he was the head judge at the 1981 Olympia, and he was the head judge at many of the Mr. Olympias in the late 70s, early 80s. But in addition to that, Roger also wrote articles for Iron Man magazine every year after the Mr. Olympia. So I'm going to bring Roger on the show, and we're going to go over a couple of his articles that he wrote for Iron Man magazine, including the 77, 78, and 79 Mr. Olympia, and also the 1986 Mr. Olympia that Lee Haney won. So that will be next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Until then, keep training hard, stay safe, and take care. See you guys later.